All right, just a reminder of our lovely comp we've got running in association with Cadbury all this week. We're inviting you to tell us why you want to send chocolate secretly to someone special this year. Why do they deserve it? What good reason do you have to send a Cadbury Secret Santa bar? Tell us about someone in your life who deserve your Secret Santa bar this year, but remember to keep it a secret. Just to invite you once again to call in, text your reasons, but be careful, don't reveal who it is or you'll ruin the surprise. Just tell us why they deserve it, okay? I'll give you some examples here of some of the fantastic entrants. And by the way, the person that you nominate for the rest of this week receives a wonderful Cadbury's hamper. It is beautiful. I'll get a picture of it for you and post it up at some point. But the person you nominate will receive this beautiful Cadbury's hamper, and you'll get the joy of knowing that you've lightened up their life. I'd like to nominate Sheila. She went into a coma for 3 months, during which time we were told every day that she wouldn't last till the morning. She came out of the coma but spent another 4 months in another hospital, where we were told that if she survived, she'd end her days in a nursing home. She got home. She's now back happily in her own house, living her best life. That comes in from Brian. Thanks for that, Brian. You're still in the draw. I'd love for my sister to get the Cadbury Hamper Prize. I've just had my third baby and she's been a superstar, helping with my two other children. When I was in hospital, even though she had a baby herself 9 weeks ago, we lost our mum at the start of this year, so we never imagined we'd be going through this newborn stage with a mum to guide us. So what a mix of emotions, the joy of life, and then of course the sadness of losing someone. But as you say, your mother is there to guide you. Thank you. Could I please nominate my 11-year-old daughter? She's a great wee girl. She helped care for her uncle when he was diagnosed with MND. She'd help feed him, get him things he wanted. He passed away in July and she's finding it very hard. She misses him so much. I know she loved that. She would love this wee surprise and be chuffed. She would split the hamper between her and his three young children. Regards from Mary. Thank you, Mary. What a wonderful daughter that you have. She is, of course, still in the running to receive this beautiful hamper from Cadbury. I'm nominating my mum and dad, Josephine and Shawnee. They got COVID and got through it. Very good parents. Then they do anything for anyone. Big heart. If someone is lonely, they take them into the house. Thank you for that, Maeve. Lovely suggestion. I'd like to nominate my home help, Katrina. She does everything for me. Since I was diagnosed with a brain tumour at 48, she's my personal counsellor and even batch cooks my favourite dinner. For me, I don't know what I would do without her. That comes in from Caroline. I would like to nominate my Aunt Teresa. My family was involved in a tragedy in April where we lost members of our family. She was there with us throughout then. First weeks in hospital and all while helping our friend go through cancer treatment. Her selflessness never wavers, always helping others. Please consider her many thanks. Colette, we will, of course. And thank you for that. And what a wonderful person. So keep your nominations coming in for someone who deserves this very special treat this Christmas from Cadbury. And just to remind you to look out for a poster near you if you want to send a Cadbury Secret Santa bar to someone special. They're popping up all over the country. Or search Cadbury Secret Santa for more details, full terms and conditions. You can visit cadbury.ie. And again, just to encourage you that if you entered earlier in the week, please resubmit those entries as well, as it's not just like a one bite of the cherry situation. Okay, so we learnt this week that the Department of Integration has confirmed it can no longer provide accommodation to all international protection applicants. A spokesperson for the department says tents and sleeping bags will be provided to people where required due to a severe shortage of housing. A total of 107 people were accommodated over the weekend. However, from earlier this week, the state is not in a position to accommodate everyone. Women and children will still be housed. And it seems open-ended as well. Bulume Dube is Community Links Officer for the Donegal Intercultural Platform, and he's in studio with me now. Bulume, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
What's your reaction to this news?
Well, I think obviously it's preposterous. I mean, it's unacceptable that people should be living on the street. The Irish government has got a duty to take care of people that are seeking international protection and people that are Irish, because I also feel this has got a potential of putting local people, Irish people, and international protection applicants at loggerheads. But the actual person to blame here is the government. That's just not providing housing for everyone.
Yeah, and, and of course, you know, we did hear that in November there was a record intake in terms of corporate tax, and we have more money at this time now than we anticipated. So it's not either or, you know what I mean? A lot of people would feel that is up to the state, if it has signed up to international obligations, that they meet those, rather than this situation we're seeing now, where, as you say, different groups of people are being pitched against each other. It's horrible to see it, isn't it, around the country?
Yeah, that's true. Well, the government has always been aware, as early as 2018, that there was a shortage of housing, particularly for asylum seekers, you know. So this is not new. This is something that has always been known. Unfortunately, of course, we have to accept that there's a huge number of international applicants, but this could all have been sorted much earlier. In 2018, the government knew that there was high volumes of people in direct provision and that there was not enough housing. And they could have been proactive and actually done something about it.
Well, we've been talking about people being stuck, in inverted commas, in direct provision for ages. That used to be the big story, didn't it? What about this? There seems to be some people seem to distinguish between people fleeing from Ukraine and international protection applicants. You'd be familiar with this terminology that's used quite widely now, that people are fearful of large groups or even individual young men from Africa, Muslim men, whatever it might be, young military-aged men coming to Ireland. That seems to be the pinch point there of people's fears and anxieties. Do you get that? Do you understand that? Does it frustrate you? Does it annoy you?
Well, the first thing, I think there's actually no need to fear people. I mean, we are all human beings at the end of the day. And people come here for various reasons, because they are fleeing, running away from some form of danger. I suppose, to a certain extent, again, you could blame the government as well for not preparing the Irish people and educating them about the reasons why people are coming here. I think there should be programs. There should be an investment in community education about why people come here.
But the policy is actually not to consult with local communities at all. At all, it seems.
Yes.
Yeah, let alone educate, but simply not say what's happening.
Yeah, I suppose, again, the fault falls directly in front of the government, again, that it should be making proactive attempts to actually integrate those people, make people aware who is coming through and why they are coming through, and, you know, make the community aware. Like you are saying, consult the community as well. It should be a consultative, participatory approach to things, instead of imposing as well. Because I suppose everybody wants to be welcomed instead of, you know, being regarded with fear.
Do you think, though, the genie's out of the bottle, that, you know, it's going to be hard to fix the feelings that are out there now, the fear, the concerns, the anger? You know, we've seen what happened in Dublin. We've seen what happened in Dublin Thursday week last. I mean, obviously, an awful lot of it was just antisocial behaviour and rioting, but it was rooted in this concern about mass immigration.
Yeah. Well, again, I suppose the anger is directed at the wrong people. I mean, if it was a protest against the government's lack of action in terms of housing and providing social care, then that protest would have been applauded as right. But again, it's not the immigrants' fault that the government is not providing or is not taking responsibility, you know. So I think the anger is directed at the wrong people. The immigrant is not the reason why there's no housing or that social services are feeling so much pressure.
Well, with that in mind, then, Bloomé, and I'm just using this to tease this conversation out because I'm really a big fan of talking. You know, when we don't talk, we have problems. Is it the case then that until such time as we get the house in order, that we get a proper accommodation, that we improve services such as access to GP services, acute hospitals, schools, places and what have you, is there an argument that we stem the flow of immigration into the country so that at the very least we can provide those that are here and the new residents of Ireland here with proper services rather than rather than inviting people into a broken service?
Well, I don't know whether you really invite people, you know, because people are sort of...
used that word, to be honest with you, because I struggled for a word. Accept people, whatever the word might be. That's no meaning to that word. It was just a word to try and describe the point.
My point is, really, I don't think you can get to a point where you say immigration should stop so that we can fix this. These things okay concurrently. I mean, when the Irish government signed up to this, it knew that it had, deficits in terms of housing, and they could have anticipated that there was going to be pressure on social services. I mean, it's a given that if you've got a new group of people coming in, they'll use your services. And you cannot subscribe to something where you cannot be able to provide. Mm-hmm. And like you said earlier on, Ireland is equipped with the financial resources to actually be able to provide those services. It lacks maybe political will, political impetus to actually provide housing and provide not only for the asylum seekers, by the way, but for its own people. Even if you took away asylum seekers, you still have got a problem in terms of provision.
We've got a housing problem so I think, and a homeless problem that predates any increase in international applications, protection applications, or the situation in Ukraine. I think anyone, we know that. That's the case. So, and also what the situation we find now, and I don't have any solutions to this, but what we're going to have now is parts of Dublin, most likely, where there's going to be large groups of individuals, you know, that are going to be living in tents. And, you know, people are going to take pictures of that and video it, and it's going to create this imagery, right? Yeah. Which is, again, really going to be counterproductive. Because we've seen these tented areas burned down in the past. You know, they have been attacked.
Well, again, I suppose civic society has got a huge role to play in terms of that, you know. We cannot anticipate the negative and say this is what is going to happen. Why should that be happening? We should be talking to people, engaging with you know, everybody involved in terms of what there's a problem of housing. You've got people sleeping in the streets. We should not be anticipating that they're going to be bent down or they're going to be hit or assaulted and that. We should be finding solutions, really, you know. At the end of the day, even the people that were protesting, they're protesting against the government because the government is not providing social services. If they were well catered for, there would not be any of that.
I really do think it's very, very important that we have these conversations out in front. Obviously housing is the issue.
Mm-hmm.
But an awful lot of what seems to motivate the conversation online is someone's religion or the colour of their skin or an area changing or Irish tradition being lost. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think sometimes for some of the commentators, the housing is a smokescreen, really.
Mm-hmm.
But if you deep down, it's Ireland for the Irish. Ireland is full. You know, now an awful lot of these people can't even speak Irish, which I find is really quite ironic. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so... are we sort of in a cultural shift in Ireland that we just have to come to terms with? Is that your view, really? Because I think if everyone had a house, Balumi, if everyone had a house, I think we'd still be probably having these conversations, but in a different way. Because people are seeing cultural changes in their community, and some people are instilling fear and saying, well, that's a very bad thing. Yeah. These people are going to hurt you. These people are going to rape you women. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And that's the language that's
unfounded, Balumi. Obviously. That's obviously very unfounded.
Let me just back you up on that before you answer the point. Yeah. The recent, we've made many inquiry to the Gardaí and the senior Gardaí in the county at a recent meeting in Letterkenny said that with the arrival of new people into Donegal, it has not in any way changed the dynamics of crime.
Yeah, I concur with that. It takes forever for culture to change.
So that statistically is true, right? So talk to me about the people that feel that Ireland's culture is at threat and that, you know, it's changing, and because I think that's what's driving a lot of fear.
Look, for me, I think this is an opportunity for Ireland to actually live 50 years ahead of time. This is what the world is going to be. You will find people living in the same space, practicing different cultures, different religions in 50 years. And it's unprecedented. We won't be able to stop that. You'll find Irish people deep down in South Africa, Zimbabwe, living there for one reason or another. The concept of migration is forever, you know. So the question of whether your culture is going to change or not is also essentially about whether we put social programs that actually protect cultures, that protect religion, but also help people to integrate, to actually
integration
relate with each other without necessarily
yeah.
saying our intention is to change anyone, you know?
Of yeah. the people, have you been speaking to any new international protection arrivals just to get a sense of what they're fleeing? Because, again, it's put out there that really they see Ireland as a welfare state and it's a good place to come and make a few quid or whatever it might be. What are, in your experience, what are people fleeing? What are they fleeing to come here in terms of risk to their lives, oppression,
well,
or whatever?
So there are a plethora of reasons why people actually flee from their homes. But let me just emphasize this. Nobody runs away from their home just to come and stay
crack.
In. Exactly, yes. Home is where everybody would want to be. And I'll tell you, 90% of the people would rather be at home. But the things that they are running away are grievous. You know, they are grave situations which are actually life-threatening. Nobody would want to live here and say, well, I want to live in somebody's home for the next whatever years, you know. So some people are fleeing war. Some people are fleeing political persecution, religious persecution. There's a plethora of reasons why people come here. Definitely not for the 38 euro that they get weekly. I mean, that's way less than what a person will be getting wherever they live.
Yeah.
And remember, again, nobody wants to leave their home. Home, no matter how poor it is home. It brings comfort and so on. You know,
there's
and,
a lot of problems in this country,
yes.
but at the same time, maybe we take for granted the country in which we live, in the freedoms that we have, the opportunities that we have. Do you think that maybe for a lot of people, they don't actually fully understand what is actually happening in other areas? Like, for an example, the situation in the Ukraine caused an awful lot of hostility, civil war, violence in parts of Africa, for an example, that people don't really see what's going on outside of just whatever Sky News or BBC News present them, that Russia have activities in other parts of the world, and that, you know, there are an awful lot of areas that are very, very unsafe to live in.
Yes. I suppose, again, perhaps that's an area which civic society can actually play in educating people about what's going on around the world. People don't really come here because they feel like going on a holiday. It's difficult. It's very difficult being away from home. And some people have been here for longer than 20 years. I mean, that's not fun to be away from your family and friends and that. Some people have no choice, really. They've got nowhere else to go. They are stateless, you know. So, yes, people need to be educated about what's going on in Southern Africa, what's going on in South America, what's going on in Somalia, Sudan. There's war all over the world. And not only
Yemen,
that,
everywhere,
but they should also be educated to a point where they can actually take action and help civic organizations to make a change in those countries so that people don't, that's the only way you can stem the flow of people coming here is by actually taking part in political activities that are in social change activities in other countries, you know?
But Lume, in terms of the demographic of the international protection applicants, what we see majority is younger fellas, right?
Yes.
They're not necessarily, are they under more threat than the women and children? Is it that they come or not here or go to any country with a view to establishing a base so they can be joined by their family, by their partners or their mother or their father? You know, why is it the majority of international protection applicants are men?
I don't know if that is true. I don't know if that is true. And if it were true, I suppose the younger you are, the more able you can be.
But is it with a view to trying to find somewhere safe for your family? Like, is it likely that a lot of these applicants, if successful in getting residency here, would want to be joined by their families or?
Not necessarily. If you are fleeing war, or if you are fleeing persecution of any sort, you just look for a place where you can find refuge.
Okay.
You don't think of, okay, I'll go first and then my family will follow. There's no logic in that when you're running
away from
danger.
The only reason I ask is because I'm trying
not at all. I think
I'm trying to get
that's
an
a perception
into
that is mostly perpetrated by people that assume that people are here to siphon the social welfare system or that. People are running away from danger.
Yeah.
The people are running away from possible death, you know? So when you run away, in fact, if I were to give you an example, there are refugees in Congo, you know? There are refugees in Kenya. There are refugees in poor countries. Then not all refugees run away to areas where countries are rich.
Yes.
So that's exactly my point, that people are running away from danger, from any sort of danger, wherever they can go, where they can find.
I wasn't suggesting.
And the reason why they are young is because they are able to run away. Old people probably would not have the capacity to do so.
I understand that, but I would also find it hard to leave my family behind me, you know what I mean? So I'm not... I wasn't questioning it in a negative way, but I would struggle to leave my family behind me and travel to another country. So it was an honest question, like is that the plan? Not because of money or whatever, for opportunity and safety.
Yeah, but the younger you are, the more opportunities you probably will be have. You have some people have to walk, in actual fact, to be able to run away from situations.
Yeah.
So ordinarily, you'll find younger people because they've got nothing to lose from living anyway, you know. So the demographic, if that is true anyway, that you've got young people and so on. I also think that the reason why people have got that perception that it's young people mostly is because you've got young people that are grouped into certain houses.
Yeah, for sure.
You find them in one house. But, you know, you've got all sorts of demographic. You've got old people coming here. You've got, you know, young people.
Okay,
and
good stuff.
Yes,
listen, that's why we're chatting. Yeah. That's why we're chatting, to get different points of views and perspectives.
Yeah.
You believe that there is room, that it shouldn't come down to tents. You believe there is available space around the country that the government should be looking at?
Well, yes, I do believe that. For instance, there are certain rural, towns that have got a high incidence of free rooms and that. But again, I'm not a specialist in terms of rural housing or housing for asylum seekers. All I'm saying is that the government should have been proactive in sort of sorting this out. As early as 2018, they've been aware that these high volumes of asylum seekers and then that accommodation is full. And they've done nothing about it since that time.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said again, they've got the resources to actually sort this out.
Mm-hmm.
They do have the resources. And I suppose the fact that they also have got an obligation to provide that. If you have signed up for something, then the logical thing is to provide the accommodation, you know.
Yeah. Sorry, dropped something there. So what do you say then to people that say, yes, okay, I'm not against emigration, but we should look after the Irish people first?
Well, you should look after all people. That's the right thing to do. If the Irish people were out there in the cold and they didn't have housing, I would feel, obliged that I should protest as well. I should say something about it.
I'm not coming from an opinion based as such, because I want to hear your opinion. But I do read and I do find statistics are incredibly important, and it is very, very important to note.
Yes,
that for generations we have had homeless people, we've had a shortage of accommodation. We have 1 in 7 children in poverty in this country. It's probably much higher here in Donegal. A lot of these problems are historic. And it's actually, if you were in government, you go, right, this is great, because now it's not the government that's getting the hassle, it's the immigrants that are getting the hassle.
Mm-hmm.
But we had all of these problems pre-Ukraine, the numbers of international protection. So I don't buy that argument. That's why I come back to the cultural thing, whether people are afraid of the cultural change.
Yeah.
Because as I say, anyone who knows that we've always had these problems.
Mm.
So you say that, you know, the world is going to change anyway.
Mm.
So if someone says to you, we want our Irish culture, we want Ireland for the Irish, we want Ireland to remain the way it is, you're saying, forget about that, not disrespectfully or argumentatively, you'll say, forget about that, things are going to change anyway, and they're going to change all across the world.
No.
Or what are you saying?
It's important to respect the Irish culture. It's important to respect any culture. But culture can exist, they can all exist
coexist
in one space.
Yeah.
Yes, they can coexist in one space. There is no need for anybody to be afraid that their culture is going to be lost. But again, the government has to play a part in this. Civic society has to play a part in this. You have to create systems that actually protect culture, you know? And again, I do not feel that the presence of an asylum seeker next door has got any effect on your culture. How? You know? People can practice their culture and still coexist, you know?
It reminds me, it reminds me of an old, I don't know if you're familiar with the band Public Enemy, but they had a very interesting song on all of them. It was effectively about fear, you know, and fear of change. Okay. Anything that you want to add, Bulume? I hope you don't think I'm coming across as anti anything. I'm not. I just really, as I say, and I'm sorry to reiterate this, I just think talking is so important, you see, you know, and I could try and hide away from phrasing certain questions towards you for fear of offending you.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any benefit in that.
No, not at all.
I think we have to have respectful, open conversations. And it's really interesting to hear from your perspective, you know, the attitudes, whether people like it or not, but they're hearing the words from your mouth.
Yeah, I think, it's a good platform to sort of start these conversations. And I agree with you that we need to have this kind of dialogue, you know. There's no need for people to be afraid of each other. In fact, in most of my association with Irish people, I mean, we sit down and talk about these things. Honestly, we get to a point where we realize there's nothing to be afraid of. Mm. But sometimes you also realize that there's a need to put pressure on the government to do something, mm-hmm. to fund social projects, to fund community projects that can actually help people to come together and realize that there's nothing to be afraid of, you know.
It's kind of strange too, Bulume, that we're revisiting this conversation when we are now, because I really feel sorry for, you know, there's a huge population of second generation immigrants in this country, you know, young black kids, young Muslim kids in schools, children of color who were born here. They're 15, 16, 17 years of age now. You know, the parents might work down in the hospital or somewhere else. And they're being looked at as if they just came into the country yesterday.
It must be
really tough. It must be really tough to have at this stage of your life all of a sudden feel like, well, why are people conversing about whether I should be here or not?
That's true.
You know, because there is.
Yeah.
You know, and I just wonder if those people have a voice as life changed for those young people. Are nurses who are in the hospital for the last 15 years all of a sudden getting sideways looks walking down the streets of Letterkenny, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because people think, oh, if you just come in on a bus.
Most immigrants that I hear find a source of income. They work hard. They contribute to Irish society in one way or another. They go to school and try to educate themselves about the Irish culture and Irish ways, and they get a job and they work. They contribute to the tax system, you know. So really, at the end of the day, I think maybe we need to get to a point where we learn something from each other. Without really talking about the government and civic society, whenever we meet, we need to talk and realize and find, you know, common ground. There's a lot we can learn from each other.
There is. You know? And, you know, there's not a great deal of logic if we weren't in this situation. We were just in the street and I blamed you for me not having a house. I don't know how long you've been living here, but do you know what I mean? It's not, you don't provide the house, you don't take the house from me. There is a very well-funded organisation, i.e. the state, that their duty is to provide both of us a house. So why should I fall out with you? Because
that's true. That's,
you know,
so true.
Like that, on a very basic level. Now, as I say, you know, I'm not all woke and everything's rose in the garden. I every day for me is a learning day, and my opinions are always changing and moving and what have you. But I do believe in statistics. I believe in history.
Yes.
And I believe that also you need to direct your anger in the right directions as well.
Yes.
When I say anger, I mean your drive and your motivation. And
yes. So the pressure should be put on the government really at this point to try and provide housing. So that there's no conflict between, you know, communities.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be sorted easily.
Finally, COP28's ongoing at the moment. They've created a fund. We're contributing it to sort of, you know, what the West, the damage it is doing to countries in other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe the West should be doing more, or, you know, Europe should be doing more to make areas in Africa, in Asia, or wherever they might be, more hospitable, more peaceful? Like, in other words, I presume you said most people would like to stay where they are.
Mm-hmm.
But the way the world is going, people are being driven from their homes effectively by the action of a small group of other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we need to be also at the same time doing more to make people's home countries more hospitable, more prosperous, more safe?
Oh, yes. I had this conversation with my manager just recently, and I was saying to him the same thing you are suggesting now, that You know, in the 80s, independence in Southern Africa was won by people all over the world. Mm-hmm. There were protests in London to free Nelson Mandela. There were protests everywhere so that there was liberation in Africa. The same thing should be happening. Instead of chasing away asylum seekers, you should be saying, how can we help you so that you solve the problems that you have at home? It will take a long time to solve, but that's the only way you can be able to sort of stem this influx of immigrants moving, you know, into the so-called rich areas. Take part in civic activity to change things.
And another thing, just to make that point too, and it's very, very clear, and if you look at some of the documentation from Russia and what have you, it is very clear that Vladimir Putin, whether you love him or loathe him, most people loathe him, of course, is that part of his strategy was to cause unrest by driving Ukrainians into other countries.
Yes.
I mean, that was his strategy. And then he says, if we keep enough of these people out of Ukraine and in other countries, well, then all of a sudden the support of the West will start to wobble because we start having the conversations about it here now.
That's
so
very true.
Displacement of people is actually now a tool of war.
That's very true. And in actual fact, if you go to a point where negotiations could take place, in some situations, sometimes war is preventable with the support of everybody else, you know. But there will be instances where you will have situations where people are driven out of a country by situations that you can't control, like climate change. And that is not just going to affect Africa or a certain poor country. It's going to affect every part of the world. Ireland itself might have that kind of problem. And if they were to move themselves, will they accept the same reception, you know?
Well, many of us have moved. And when I talk about how so many of us have moved to England, to Dubai, to Australia, to America, people automatically come back and go, yes, but we go over there and work.
But, you know, even immigrants here, if you go to, you know, accommodation centres, at this moment, you probably will not find anybody there because all of them are going to look for work or they are all employed, you know. So they are not people that are here really to come and scare anyone or to hurt anyone. If you listen to their stories, you'll realize that there are people that are here to contribute. There are people that are here to start a new life. There are people that have run away from a certain situation. If they were comfortable, they'll not be here, you know.
Yeah. All right. Listen, it's been an interesting conversation, Bilume.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling up. We'll keep the lines of communication open. I think it's always good to talk and hear different views and stuff. But for now, Bilume Dube, Community Links Officer for Donegal Intercultural Platform, thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. I just feel at this day and age that people are kind of locked into their opinions now. And I just wonder if anyone listening to that last conversation has had their views changed one way or other. It'd be interesting to hear from you too. 086 60 25,000. Like, did you listen to that and go, well, maybe I don't think like that anymore, or I do think, or maybe I think like that more now? Interesting. Just would be interesting as a sort of a bit of a social study to see if those types of conversations, which will always have, you know, do impact people in any meaningful way. Or are we now so enshrined in our opinions or entrenched in our opinions that it doesn't really matter what anyone says anymore? If the persecution in these countries is as bad as these illegals say, why isn't the EU sending an invasion force to remind the various regimes? The truth is, Greg, they're coming here for the money, and their presence is no help to those who are genuine, like the Ukrainians, say, caller says. Ask your guest why this is, in some cases, the fifth country they've landed in. Another, the sense of entitlement of that gentleman is beyond belief, coming here and dictating to us about not giving them enough. Most people I know are more than generous in trying to give as much as they can afford. Can't understand how we're considered a rich country. I'm working all my life and I'm not rich, but I contribute what I can. But our way of life, our freedom, contributed to a quite happy lifestyle. Good morning, Greg. Asked that man what country he landed in, Europe, in before flying into Ireland. I'm not sure how long he's been here for, probably a long time. Let every other country look after itself. We've enough to look after our own and can't even do this. But I will say, just for the conversation, a lot of the looking after in this country is done by people from other countries. That is just the way it is. So what are you saying? That if we are going to look after ourselves, do we clear everybody out? and who works in all the jobs that immigrants do in this country? Or do you say you want your cake and eat it, say, right, well, we'll keep in the ones now that are there useful and get rid of the ones I don't like? You know, what does that mean when you say, when someone says, let every other country look after ourselves, we've enough to look after our own and can't even do this? So are you saying anyone who is not originally from here goes, and if that happens, the health system collapses? So what do we do then? I'm just, as I say, I'm not expressing a point of view. It's a counterpoint to that, just to make us think or not think. Hi, it makes sense. Sorry, that's a different one there. All right, Greg, people are not against immigration. What they are starting to object to is the unlimited number of people where we have no place to put them, which is ridiculous. Another problem is, as this gentleman said, it's an inept government policy. Irish people have always been very generous, but we always try to help people. Good morning, Greg. These people are guests in our country, yet want us to change it to suit. Imagine calling around to that man's house and to start changing his house decor. He wouldn't allow it. Another, good morning, Greg. Will you tell that man that the government's first obligation is to its people, yet they put immigrants first? Now we're full. They are complaining about the government. The HSC are the people who have fills up Ireland in no time. A bucket only holds so much water. It is the government's fault for letting too many in at the behest of the EU. Well, it's not the behest of the EU. This is something we voluntarily signed up for. The majority want immigration curbed. For God's sake, it's obvious we can't take and don't want anymore. We are being taken for mugs, believe this listener. Has that gentleman no blame for his own government? Our government can't make houses pop up like mushrooms. Our working population is meant to provide for all those driving into our country, as well as try and provide for our families. We can only help so many. Another, I've registered two rooms in my house to help with this a number of months ago. I got a return call to confirm my offer, but I've heard nothing since. Greg, why does the Irish government owe foreigners a home whilst we have to pay for it all, says a listener, and on it goes. Thank you very much for all of your comments. If you have a positive comment as well too, please, I would appreciate you getting the phone out and sending it as well, just for balance. But maybe that is the majority of you as well, which is the way it is. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. Hi, it makes sense for On Green On to be locked. Can you imagine someone slipping down the stone steps? There would be a claim made for sure. Yeah, okay, well... But where is the personal responsibility? Like, are we, if we slip on a set of steps now, is it someone else's fault? I mean, what about personal responsibility? But anyway, yesterday's smud slinging from Fine Gael and an opposition party has got to be a signal to the people how desperate they are to hold on to power. Back to our conversation we had earlier this hour, which African country offers social welfare payments at the rates that we do? No, but always, there's always something better than where you came from. There wouldn't be the anger out there if the government had housed the Irish homeless first. This could have been done years ago. Knowing what we know now, we were told there was enough money, but all of a sudden, and it's really been all of a sudden, they housed over 100,000 in a matter of 2 years. Irish people have an anger against the government, not the people coming in, but when is enough enough? It's clearly the country can't continue this open-door policy. And listen, at the end of the day, the housing solution that we've employed, you talked about housing over 100,000, that's not a long-term solution either. All of those people really would need to be put into decent long-term accommodation, wouldn't they? Because, you know, hotel room one night, with one child is tough. You wouldn't want to live in that situation, would you? Or maybe it's better than what you're fleeing and you've no sympathy at all. Okay, back with news.